Welcome to UEG Podcast, where we talk about scientific discoveries, educational insights, and professional development within the world of digestive health. Whether you're a clinician, researcher, or just passionate about GI content, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational and hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. And today we're talking about do's and don'ts in academia, gory details of the research life. For this, we're going to Rome, the country of Machiavelli, to a master of all things microbiome, past Rising Star awardee, and a gastroenterologist whose natural habitat is academia, Gianluca Ianiro. Welcome to UG Talk, Gianluca.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Ciao, ciao. It's great to have you with us. And please do share all the details of the life of an academia.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
We're very, very happy to have you with us. So let's jump in. You have been on academic Star Trek for quite a bit. Do you have any long-term strategy, any end goals where you want to be at the end of this journey, and any principles that guide you through your academic galaxy?
It could be, you know, a bit, you know, common sense, but probably there are three main rules, at least in my experience, because every experience is different. First, have fun. Yeah, you should have fun. Otherwise, you cannot do it just for power or for money or for being in the spotlight.
Okay, fair enough.
You should have fun when you do your research and you stay in academia. This is a very complex environment, so it should be funny. Otherwise, it's not worth the candle.
Okay.
This is the first rule. The second rule is do it with passion. Do it your choices with passion, because if you do your choices with passion, you will have a very good journey. Otherwise, one or the other day, you will give up, because there will be frustrations, there will be obstacles, there will be issues. And if you don't have a shining light, a passion that moves you and drives you, basically, it will be very hard.
Okay. You have to have this underlying devotion to the science and enjoy it to keep you going.
Exactly. And the third one is be fair. You should go on your bed and sleep, basically without having done anything bad at the end of the day. So you should be fair.
Oh, Gianluca, that's very tall order. This is very hard to do in this cutthroat world.
Yeah, but at least in academia, because, you know, there are plenty of chances to do something bad for your advantage, to boost your career or whatever. But at the very end, this doesn't pay.
Okay, so basically it's fun, passion, and being a saint.
Yes, not a saint, but being fair.
Okay. Okay, but you know, fair is conditional on the situation. Or is it fair to everybody, or is it fair to me or the other person? It could be very situational.
I think act and deal with people as you want to be dealt by other people. This could be a good rule of thumb.
Okay, Christian rule number one.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've been far away from here. And the farther you get, the more opportunities arise. How do you prioritize? Do you have like certain criteria for a project to be on your to-do list, or things not to work out for you? How do you choose?
It depends on the stage of your career. At the very beginning, it could be natural to have a kind of fear of missing out, the FOMO. And this is important. At the end, at the beginning of my career, I did a lot of talks, a lot of events, and so on. And I think they helped me in building my career. But at a later stage of careers, probably it's also good to leave some space for other people, for example, the persons of your team, your collaborators. And this is fair because they can also start to have some visibility in the field. And so I would give some advice on, at least in my experience, that the choices should be driven by two kinds of reasons. scientific reasons, like prestige of the, I don't know, the events of the Congress or the talks of whatever, but also some human reasons. For example, if you are invited by a colleague that helped you in the past, it is a very good way to be grateful to come, even if the event is not big. But, you know, the human reason also counts, because it's also important to keep you true and effective networks.
Okay, so it's part science, part heart.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we're going back to being fair, because once you do the job, there are results to be published. And things around authorship can get quite contentious. How do you approach sharing the fruits of the labor? First of all, very simply, should authorship clause be predefined before the start of the study of an article?
Well, this is an important point, because usually when you are in your internal group, it's easier. The most critical issues can arise from big collaborations. I think it's fair to define roles first, but please also consider that the roles can be flexible, because if at the very end, the one that was planned to lead the project gives up, you know, and someone else takes the lead, this should be discussed. So they should switch places or share a co-authorship. There are several ways to make everyone happy. But the only thing that I suggest is not to assign roles depending on the prestige of the author or on the position of the author, of the academic position of the author, but on what they did. If you worked as a coordinator, you should be last author. If you worked as leading author, as a first author, you should be first author. Regardless your position, you are a student, you are a senior trainee, you are a physician, you are a consultant, you are an academic researcher, you are a professor.
Okay, so for you, it's pure meritocracy.
Yes.
The ones that put the job gets the glory.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Now, another scenario is where you put all the blood, sweat, and tears, and you don't find yourself on the author's list. How would you approach this? Has it happened to you?
Maybe sometimes, especially when in case of projects led by other authors, not by my centers. Basically, in this case, it depends. It happened when I did not a big job, when I did part of the job, but not the biggest one, because it's hard to say no to someone who did considerable part of the job.
Still, if you put the work in, it has to be acknowledged.
Yes, but you know, now it's very difficult to have things like this.
Okay, because we have a system, we have the guidelines of
exactly
what constitutes an authorship, right?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
And in my opinion, I would never kick out someone who has worked, because this someone can write to the editor and say, okay, well, I worked in this project and my name is not on the list.
Okay, so it's also self-preservation and your good name.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And what if the situation is quite the opposite, the uncomfortable push to include someone among the authors who hasn't participated? What do you do in those cases where you get the pressure to include someone?
It depends, because maybe obviously you have to follow some rules. So you have to check if someone has somehow helped the prosecution of the project. For example, has visited the patients, has collected some data.
The clinical part.
The clinical part, but also the organizational part. If someone has helped you submitting the paperwork for the ethical committee, so it's fair to have in. Another part is just, okay, I want this guy to each, there should be a reason.
He's a good friend.
No. About good friends, this is an important topic, because in some cases, you want to put some good friends into some projects. While in the other case, you become good friends of your project collaborators because you have a mutual esteem. It happened to me always the second case and not the first ones.
So it's quid pro quo then.
Yeah, but coming back, basically, if you feel that this person that you want to add has something to say in this topic, okay, then you can consider, for example, if you have written a review article on IPMNs and you want to involve key opinion leader on IPMN to give you an opinion on your paper, well, even if he hasn't written one word, but is giving you his comments or have comments, well, that can be fair. It is a critical review of the manuscript.
Okay, and what if the reason is to have an opinion leader on the author list just to improve the odds of the publishing?
Yes, obviously. Yeah, yes.
This happens, right?
This happens, but it depends also on the opinion leader. The opinion leader, if he or she wants to be included, because it depends on the matter of the paper.
Okay.
Because, for example, if you want to promote a probiotic through a review article on a project, and this paper is written badly or has been conducted not well on a methodological point of view, basically you can say no, thank you.
Yeah, sure. You don't want to sully your name.
Yeah, but I think that having a key opinion leader in can help you in boosting not only the likelihood of paper publication, but rather the
spread.
Not the spread.
Citations?
Not the citation, but basically the shape and the reliability of the paper. And then if the paper is more reliable, because a key opinion leader has given you some insightful comments, then also the likelihood of publication, citation, and whatever increases.
Okay, so opinion leader is like a quality indicator of the work.
Not always, but if he or she really helps, then it can be a good option.
Or if they are a good friend.
No.
Okay, we're done with the authorship. Going to very cutthroat things, everybody is trying to get published, seen, and acknowledged. And fighting for your spot under the sun can get quite ugly. What do you consider definite unforgivable sins in academia?
Okay, I think we have at least two unforgivable sins. One is to be unfair. Unfair means that for the sake of my career, of my publication, or whatever, I act bad and with an egoistic view with my peers. So, for example, I scoop your idea while you have spoken with me to build it together, or I ask for your help and then I don't gratify you in a proper manner, for example, with an author name.
Okay.
Or I want to go too fast and skyrocket my field. And for this, I don't respect other peers.
What do you mean exactly?
For example, trespassing some rules. For example, building a project where I am not expert without involving someone in the field that can help me.
Okay. Any more unforgivable sins?
Yes. When you are on the top, to be snobbish and arrogant. This is not fair because, for example, you should always spend time to speak with the young fellows or with the other colleagues, because every one of us was young. And in our past, someone else spent our time and shared his or her knowledge with us. So we should do the same.
And also pay it forward. Don't keep it to yourself, just.
Yes, exactly. To share knowledge.
Okay. So two things will get on your blacklist is being unfair or being snobbish and arrogant.
Yes.
Let's avoid those. Now, research is a team sport. Everybody has a role to play and a way to pull. What do you do to be fair when someone is not performing? What's the rule? Three strikes and you're out? How do you manage these things?
Basically, this is important. First, when you manage a group, you have to consider not only the work performance, but also the human issues. And you are first to understand why this person is not performing well. If there is a personal issue, if there is a crisis in his life, if he or she doesn't like anymore what you are doing, if he feels some problems inside the group and he feels attacked or he feels not considered enough. So first you have to discuss. Discussing is the most important way to solve these kind of issues in my view. Then if you have a reason, you can even discuss, okay, you may continue at 50%, at 25%, but also the gratification will be less, obviously.
Okay. So also, the first thing is the human touch, the humanity.
Yes.
See what's the reason behind, right?
Exactly.
And okay, this is your position as a boss. But now as I'm just a working bee, and I feel like there's a project that I'm about to fail bigly and screw up, and I'm in over my head. When I fail, if I fail, how do I get back? You know, how to get back into the good graces of your bosses or your colleagues when you mess up?
Basically, the unforgivable sin here is to be unfair with your colleagues, to show up with your boss. This is totally unfair. And I don't like this kind of moves because I like fair atmosphere in the group. And to avoid this, a good leader should, which is not a boss, I don't like this term, a good leader should give everyone chances to express themselves. Then everyone will follow his career, his pathway, depending on the force, depending on the talent. But at least you should give the same opportunities to everyone who is interested at the same level.
Okay. And lastly, I mean, there would be all these nuances and situations to be discussed, but I guess the guiding principles for you are fairness and humanity, right?
And meritocracy.
That encompasses a lot of values, and it's very value-based system that you have.
Yeah, there is a balance between the productivity and the human touch. Because, you know, you should consider that we are humans and we can fail. So we all of us can have bad moments in our life and we are not indestructible. So we can have bad personal moments that can influence badly your career, and you should consider it. I remember once there was a great guy, Professor Jean Tac, told me, I have been basically rejected by all journals. This is why I was able to publish very well.
As a lifetime awardee, lifetime achievement awardee, this is quite inspiring to hear.
Yes, but to me, it was really a shining light, because to say I was a huge failure because I was rejected by a lot of journals with my papers. But this is probably one of the recipes for success.
Perseverance and keep on going, right?
Yes, and also feeling that everyone has failed.
Okay, so we have to wrap it up. And do you have any advice for someone who's trying to get into academia or is already on the path but struggling?
Okay, basically, first, a general one is ask yourself if you want to do this first. So if you have enough passion and you don't want to do just for power, for be famous or other things. As I told you before, the first guidance should be the passion. The other point is go to congresses and build a network. This is very important. And finally, you should have a network, but you should have also something in your hands to propose to the others. So for example, start with the original papers. So publish original papers, do projects, so you can become expert in one field. Along with the original papers, please also consider to do some review articles, maybe with some key opinion leaders that help you in becoming an expert as well. But the first thing, you should have original papers to bring to the scientific audience. And then that you can present also as abstract as in congresses, like the UG Week.
So we're back again to meritocracy and the human touch, right?
Yes. Basically, these are simple rules.
Very much so. And I expected something very Machiavellian.
No, usually I think the Machiavellic rules were effective in a time where people killed each other. But as we are not in a time anymore where people kill each other, at least in academia, if you want to run a long-term journey, you should be fair, because you can act sneaky and bad one time, two times, three times. But at the fourth time, no one will follow you ever and anymore.
Fair enough. Again, fair enough. Gianluca, thank you so, so much for such a humane conversation. It was enlightening and inspiring. Thank you.
And it was funny.
I'm sorry. And thank you to the audience for joining our conversation on the do's and don'ts on academia. And we hope to see you soon in the next episode.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to UEG Podcast. We hope you found some new ideas, insights, and inspiration to take with you. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you like our content, please leave us a review and share our podcast with your colleagues.